It's 8:13 on the ticket, week 13 for us here in the bunker. It's a Monday morning with the Musers. And thank you to ESPN for giving us something to talk about each week with a brand new 30 for 30. It was the 5 weeks worth of The Last Dance, the Jordan documentary. Then we got Lance for a couple weeks, Bruce Lee, and last night, Long Gone Summer, a 30 for 30 about the summer of 1998 and the home run battle between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And I really enjoyed this, as I've enjoyed all of these 30 for 30s. You go back to 1994, and that's kind of how they started this documentary, reminding you that that was the worst year ever in baseball history with the strike and no World Series, and the fans really turned on baseball. So 4 years later, they really needed something magical like this home run battle. And somebody said during this 30 for 30, the home run battle, because the home run is the biggest moment in a baseball game. It's the most exciting moment. The home run battle was bigger than pretty much any World Series.
Yeah.
People got more into that around the nation and around the world even than they do the World Series.
It was huge. And you always hear nostalgic stories about baseball and you're growing up, DiMaggio streak, or just a period of time of the Dodgers or the Yankees. That was really the most legendary summer of our lifetime, baseball, that I can remember watching, and that classic back and forth, and it was everywhere. Everyone was talking about it, and every day you tried to get an update, no matter where you were, as to did Sammy hit a home run or did McGwire hit a home run.
And even though eventually we would come to look at the summer of 98 through a different lens, a steroid lens, a human growth hormone lens, it's still, in everything that I've ever lived through in baseball, it still was the best thing for baseball that I've ever seen happen.
Yeah.
I've never seen America get more into baseball than the summer of 98 and those two guys going back and forth. And when I was younger and a huge baseball fan, like every kid, I was captivated by the home run hitter. And I remember when I was growing up in the 70s, the guys who would win the home run titles would hit 35 to 45 home runs. That would normally win it. And I remember one summer, 1977, when George Foster of the Reds hit 52 home runs. And I couldn't believe it.
Seemed way out there.
How can I know the record is 61 by Maris, and I know Babe hit 60. But in my lifetime, I hadn't seen anybody hit 50. And when George Foster hit 52, I just thought he was a god.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't, he must be the greatest baseball player ever because he hit 52. And then after that, we went back to 40, 48, 41, 37, winning the home run title for years and years and years. And it wasn't until 90 and Cecil Fielder hit 51 that somebody else topped 50. So, and I think Mark McGwire said this last night in the 30 for 30. Just getting to 50 is a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then the thought of going from 50 to 61 is, well, it was unthinkable. But going into that 98 season, everybody thought that that was the year, for whatever reason, based on the previous year and the trend, that somebody, most likely Mark McGwire, was going to break Maris's record. And as McGwire said, you know, I didn't really understand all the talk before the season started, but I'll be damned, they were right.
Yeah, King Griffey Jr. in that discussion, too, because he got off to a great start. And I don't remember the preseason hype. I remember it after that first month. That's when it really took hold, because both those guys, and even King Griffey Jr. in that first month, they were on pace for something really great.
Yeah, it was really interesting to be reminded that it was McGwire versus Griffey for 2 months. And it wasn't until Sammy Sosa's ridiculous June,
yeah,
where he hit 20 home runs in that month, the record, that he entered the discussion. And Sosa said, I hated the cold weather. So I was nowhere in April and May, but once it warmed up, then I got hot. And he, you know, he's from the Dominican, he loves the heat, and so that's when he started to feel good. But I had forgotten it was McGwire versus Griffey, and then Griffey had a slump, fell out of it. It became McGwire versus Sosa.
Yeah.
they go way back and they trace each player's origin. McGuire, here's the argument that those who say that the doping didn't really help him that much. Because he was crushing the ball when he was a kid. He goes to USC. He sets the school record for home runs in a season. He sets the rookie record for major leaguers, home runs in a season. Well, was he doping from high school all the way through his rookie year? Maybe.
Maybe.
Probably not. Maybe. I don't know. I do know he looked a lot different than he did in 1998. You know, in the mid-80s, he was still a big guy.
Kind of long and lanky, though, when we first came up, I always thought.
He was long and lanky. He was still a big guy, and he was still a monster home run hitter. So you have to give him that. And like they asked him point blank, do you think the steroids helped you hit 70 home runs? Would you have done it without? And he said, I don't know. And I think the reason he said, I don't know, one was to preserve his reputation, but two was because he made honestly think, when I was at USC, I was crushing it and I wasn't doing human growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a rookie with the A's, I was killing it and I wasn't doing it. So some guys are, and I do believe he was, as he said, a born home run hitter. I also believe that the doping did help him get to those extremes, maybe 62, 65, 70 home runs. I don't know that he does that without it. But it's kind of like the whole Lance debate that we had a couple weeks ago and the era that he was winning in. McGuire was hitting all these home runs when everybody else was on the juice, too.
Yeah.
So, was he still the best home run hitter of his era, with or without the juice? I think so.
Yeah, I think he was, too. And it was so prevalent back then that, like the Lance thing, I think a lot of those power guys thought, if I'm really going to be productive and I'm paid for productivity and our team wins based on my productivity, I've got to do this.
I found it really interesting that they only dealt with the steroid issue the last 15 minutes of this two-hour documentary. I thought it was going to be the focus. Briefly, about an hour in, they talked about Andro. Oh, his beloved Andro.
No, he loves it so.
And how, you know, midway through this home run crazy season, a reporter's talking to McGuire at his locker, and he notices Andro on the shelf behind him, and he says, what's that? And McGuire says, oh, nothing, as he lights up a cigarette and makes excuses. And, of course, it turned out to be something, although nothing on the banned list. And, of course, McGuire in 2011 would admit he was taking Andro and everything else in the book. Steroids, human growth hormone, everything.
Yeah.
But as he said, it wasn't illegal in baseball. Now, it was in life.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. Baseball didn't have a policy on it. He did say, I took it for injuries, to help me get through injuries. That, I'm not sure I buy. I think that was part of the reason. I think the other part was it gave him more pop.
Yeah, I think that's a way for them to justify it in their own mind. And I think some of it is, you know, they have aches and pains as they get up in their careers. But it was about power.
Sammy would never go so far as to say he took steroids. He didn't really talk about it in this 30 for 30. All he would say when asked about it was, I'm good. I'm happily married. I've got a grandkid. I'm happy with my career. I'm good.
Yeah.
And he did say, everybody else was juicing, so why are they coming after me? But that's about all he went into it.
And I guess that was the focus. They just wanted, let's go back to that year and just how magical it was, just the day-to-day. And how about some of those series when the Cardinals and Cubs would get together and those two are going at it? Who was going to be the first one to get to 50 and all that?
And I want to get to that, but I want to say one more thing about the steroid thing. Because it reminded me of the same discussion we had about Lance 2 or 3 weeks earlier. Here are McGuire and Sosa, who have done something so great for this sport. They have re-energized a sport that was on life support after 1994. They've brought America together. You see black people, white people, Hispanic people in the crowd all hugging and cheering these guys. These guys would go on the road, and the road fans would be giving them standing ovations.
Yeah.
And they got everybody to forget about their problems, to forget about politics for just a moment while the game was going on. And they made America feel good that summer. Like Lance, right? He mm-hmm. made the cancer community openly talk about cancer, and it wasn't a stigma anymore, and he helped save a lot of people, and he gave so many millions of people hope, and he did all this good, but he gained the platform through doping. These guys did all this good, but they gained the platform through doping. And isn't that a really difficult thing to sort through?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and especially for the fans of those individual teams. I mean, the nation tuned in, but just thinking St. Louis and Chicago, what those two represented, and especially that year.
It was a crazy year. They look at it from each team's point of view. For the Cubs, that was the year that Harry Caray did the face plant into some spaghetti.
That was a tough one.
Oh, died at dinner.
That was quite a year. That was Kerry Wood's first year, too.
Kerry Wood's first year. And they thought that's all they were going to have to talk about. They thought the Cubs were going to be terrible, that it was just Kerry Wood and nobody else.
Wasn't that one of the worst skip shots of all time surrounding Kerry Wood's name?
What was it?
Didn't he say it was Kerry Wood burning fireplace? Somehow he worked that in.
Maybe.
I just remember it was such a horrible shoehorn.
Great, you mean?
It's stupid.
Chicago brings out the best in Skip.
Jeez.
They went back and they showed early Sammy Sosa. The Rangers got their moment in the sun when they showed the Rangers signing Sosa as a 17-year-old. He's wearing a Rangers uniform. They go to a clip from a presidential debate in 2000, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And maybe it was, it must have been, 2000. Yeah. And George W. Bush is up there. And he is asked by a reporter in the debate, what is your biggest regret or biggest mistake you've made, something like that. And he said, well, I used to be involved with the great Texas Rangers baseball club, and I'm the one who okayed the Sammy Sosa for Harold Baines trade. That's my biggest regret. And I do remember in that summer of 98, all of us Ranger fans, everybody here in this market, and the ticket was on the air at the time, that came up every day. He used to be ours.
To be a superstar here. Yeah, 89. At the time, it seemed like, all right, if the Rangers are going to make a move, we didn't. It was a hard sell that Sosa was a really good prospect, and you thought you had a chance at the A's, but it turns out, ironically, because of Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco, you had no chance at catching the A's.
Right. So they take you through, after giving you background on each player, they take you through the race, and it really heats up in June, and these guys are just back and forth. Although I found it interesting that at the end of 0 days through that entire season, did Sammy Sosa ever have the home run lead? He got the lead during a game. I believe they were playing the Cardinals in this game at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Where he actually took the lead that day, but McGwire tied him back and then passed him, I think, in extra innings. So they were very close, but McGwire held the lead practically every day at the end of play.
You could win some money on that one. I don't know if I ever knew that, but that was a really surprising stat that they threw out at the end.
But they're very, very close. It was McGwire with 48, Sosa with 47, McGwire with 50, Sosa with 49. It just was like that throughout the summer. And I mentioned how the road fans got so into these two guys. When they would come to town, they talked about the Marlins, who didn't draw flies back then. But when the Cardinals came to town, they had 50,000 there. They were sold out.
Yeah.
And these two guys were selling out every park around the country, and everybody was watching their games. And they showed this one game from August 28th at Busch Stadium. They've got 50,000 in the house. McGwire argues a call third strike, first inning, and the ump tosses him. And the fans, who are all there not to see the Cardinals win, they're there to see Mark McGwire hit a home run. They start throwing stuff on the field. They can't believe this umpire. We're not there to watch the umpire. No. We have paid to watch McGwire get four at-bats.
I'd forgot about that. Boy, McGwire did light him up. You could see several F-bombs thrown his way and finally threw him out. But, yeah, they almost had to stop that game. It got so crazy.
Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, McGwire is at 60. And they've got a series with the Cubs. And everybody thinks this is going to be the game that he's going to hit his 61st, and he's going to tie Roger Maris. So They bring Roger Maris's family to the park. It couldn't have happened more perfectly because they're playing the Cubs, so Sosa's in the outfield. The Maris family is there. Everybody in the world is expecting it. And McGuire delivers. He hits number 61. The place goes crazy. He hits it off. Who the hell is Mike Morgan? I'd forgotten about that. And it was a really cool moment. And then he hits number 62. I guess it was maybe the next day.
Yeah.
And that was, as he said, my shortest home run of the season. It was a line drive that just got out in the left field corner by the foul pole. And he hits number 62. Now, he is the all-time record holder, probably the most hallowed record in baseball, the single-season home run record, at least at the time. We look at it differently now. The place goes crazy. They stop the game. Sosa comes in, hugs McGuire. Didn't really sit too well with his Cubs teammates that he did that, but I thought that was a great moment for Sosa.
It was so weird. All the Cubs were just like giving him high fives, mm-hmm. and it was really bizarre.
I loved seeing that, and I loved this story. This was maybe my favorite story out of the entire 30 for 30. So they build it up by telling you that whatever fan gets the home run ball, number 61 or number 62, that ball is going to be worth $1 million at auction.
Mm-hmm.
That fan is going to become an instant millionaire. And they showed the fan who caught number 61, police had to escort him out of the stadium because they feared people would jump him to grab the ball.
Yeah.
Well, what happened to number 62? It was tracked down by a groundskeeper. You're going to hear him talk about this here. And at the very end, he does gain some celebrity out of this because you'll hear him on the Letterman show. It's Tim Fornaris. He's the one who got the home run ball, number 62. And what a good human being. What a great guy because of what he did with it.
We knew that there was going to be a lot of confetti that was going to be shot out onto the field if Mark broke the record. We stood on a concrete platform that was right above the wall. And so, you could see perfect.
There's where it went. In between the caves for the strikeouts at the top of the wall in left field.
As it's traveling, I jump off the wall and I see it go through. And I'm like, holy cow, there it is. You know, and so I just start to run. I get it and I stuff it in my pocket. When you see McGuire touch home plate, you'll see us come busting out of the gate to pick up confetti.
So you're running around the field picking up confetti with this number 62 ball in your pocket?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring a member of the Cardinal ground crew to the microphone and to the stage. And the reason why is that Mr. Tim Fornaris, a member of the Cardinal ground crew, ended up with the baseball that was hit for home run number 62. And he wants to present it to Mark McGuire.
I mean, I knew that being worth $1 million and things like that. Yes, I knew that. I had nothing to do with it. You know, this ball just happened to come, you know, close to me. I got it. And, you know, I know that he had worked hard throughout his career.
Mr. McGuire, I think I have something that belongs to you.
Was there anybody else there? Did you have to run to get the ball before anybody else, or was it fairly unencumbered?
Well, there were four other guys that were there, and one was my brother. Unfortunately for him, he's 2 years older, and he's a little chubbier, so he didn't... I was able to beat him out.
What a good sounding guy.
Yeah.
I hope McGuire gave him a little something, did he?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. But you know, at the time, I expected much more of a reaction from McGuire to like put his arm around him and say thank you. He just took the ball from him and held it up.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of like,
oh man.
Don't you publicly show how much you appreciate this guy?
The guy just handed you $1 million.
Yeah.
Your ball, yeah, for the record.
But I loved his reasoning. Hey, he's the one that worked for it. I just found it. Why do I get $1 million?
Yeah.
Well, because you found it. That's the thing. If I find a diamond out in a state park somewhere where you can keep the diamond, I don't say, well, I really need to return this back to nature because nature made it.
And by
no,
the way,
I go sell it. I get my million.
And by the way, was it really McGuire's ball? I mean, he hit it out. He didn't want it, right? He hit it out
yeah,
of the park.
That's right. If he wanted it so bad, he would have thrown down the bat and just caught it when the pitcher threw it to him.
So after that moment, he gets to 62. He breaks the record. We still have a home run champ to decide. And the two, McGuire and Sosa, were tied at 65 each with three games to go.
Wouldn't that have been something had Sammy come back and claimed the title?
And he almost did.
Yeah.
Sammy finished with 66, though. McGuire went on a rampage the last couple of games. He got to 68 on the Saturday before the season ended. And he told LaRussa, I'm fried. I don't want to play tomorrow. Last game. And LaRussa said, you have to play. I have to put you on the lineup card. He said, I'll watch you, but you got to go out there. And McGuire said, okay. And he hits two more home runs on Sunday.
How about that? Why would you not? I know he was fried. I'm sure he was. There was a lot of pressure on him. They showed all the autograph sessions where he had baseballs thrown at him and all the press conferences. But still, you've got to go. You got to go play.
It's one more game. Just go up there and walk or fan at the pitches. Who cares? But the fans are going to want to see you.
Absolutely.
And I just thought it showed how much more gas he did have in the tank because he hits two more and he hits 70 home runs.
Yeah.
It was a really fun trip down memory lane like most of these 30 for 30s have been. I really enjoyed that. I thought Bob Costas summed things up at the end. About how you view the home run record now and if it was done through performance-enhancing methods, that it's really hard to fully embrace 70 or Bond's eventual record. But it was a fun trip down memory lane. I'll at least say that.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot of fun while it was happening back in 98.
Such a great year.
Wow. This is great. Coming up next, we're going to visit with Mark McGuire to see what he thought of the 30 for 30.